Iowa's Secretary of State backs a rule for removing voters from registration rolls if they can't prove citizenship. This hour, the debate over ballot access and voter fraud. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we look at our state's changing policies on voting, as well as the integrity of our election system. We'll be joined by the Secretary of State, Matt Schultz. Also, the Executive Director of the ACLU of Iowa, Ben Stone, is with us. Former State Representative Renee Schulte as well. And Myrna Lorlein, past President of the League of Women Voters of Iowa. Join our discussion. It starts right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Iowa Secretary of State Matt Schultz says he has no intention of withdrawing a proposed new rule that establishes a process for removing voters from registration rolls if they can't prove citizenship. This hour, we want to talk about that, among other things. The debate over ballot access, voter fraud. Also, do you think Iowa needs to instate a voter ID? The law's backers say it's needed to ensure the integrity of elections, but opponents claim it could prevent thousands of people, mostly poor and minorities, from voting. We'll look at our state's changing policies on voting this hour, as well as the integrity of our election system. And we'd like to have you join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Joining us this hour is the Secretary of State, Matt Schultz, in our Iowa City studio. Secretary Schultz, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Ben.
And also joining us in our Des Moines studio, Ben Stone, Executive Director of the ACLU of Iowa. Ben Stone, welcome back.
Pleasure to be with you, Ben.
Former State Representative Renee Schulte is with us. Actually, maybe former is a little premature. Welcome to you, Representative Schulte. You're still a representative for a few more days.
Yes, thanks. Thanks
okay,
for being
when does that actually end?
Monday.
Monday, okay. Myrna Lorlein is with us, past president of the League of Women Voters of Iowa, also in our Iowa City studio. Myrna, welcome to you.
I'm glad to be here.
Okay. Let's start off with you, Secretary Schultz. You're making this proposal. You want to instate a rule that verifies, as I understand it, the status of registered voters suspected of being non-U.S. citizens. And you're going to use a Department of Transportation database. Before we talk about the how, explain your thinking on the why. Why is this urgently needed at this time?
Well, it kind of goes into the how.
Okay.
Because in March of last year, excuse me, I'm finding a cold. In March of last year, we went to the DOT and got access to the driver's licenses of individuals who are not citizens. Now, these are people who are here legally. They have a student visa, a work permit, you know, and so those individuals are able to get Iowa driver's licenses. We took that information and vetted it against our voter registration system, and we found that 3,582 individuals were listed on the DOT records as non-citizens and were registered to vote, and over 1,200 of them had cast a ballot. Now, I knew right away that it was very possible that many of these individuals, from the time that they got their driver's license and then between that time and the time they registered to vote, may have become citizens. So unlike Florida, who just started throwing people off their voter registration rolls, I thought it was important to go about this a different way. And so we put together this administrative rule to outline a process to make sure that these people received notice, that they had been flagged, that we gave the information before we even sent them notice, that we went to the federal government and got information from them to verify that they, you know, when they got their citizenship, so we wouldn't be sending letters to people who were citizens, mm-hmm. and then give those individuals another opportunity to make sure that, you know, we had accurate records before we forwarded that information to the county auditors.
And the outcome of this process?
We're still in the middle of it.
You're still in the middle of it.
Still in the middle of it.
You have that group of 1,200, did you say?
1,200 who actually cast a ballot and over 3,500 who had registered to vote.
Okay. So what comes into question as in that group, potentially fraudulent votes, are within some subset of that 1,200. let me back up. What is what was the motivation for initially going to the DOT for that database and starting the check in the first place?
That's a great question. I'm part of the a member of the National Association of Secretaries of State, and when I was at a conference in February of last year or January, you know, I was talking to other secretaries, and somebody had talked about this, and it kind of made me think. Well, you know, is this something that would actually happen in Iowa? And so that got the idea in my mind to go look at this. And so we did. We looked at it and we found that there was a potential problem. You know, three people have been arrested in Council Bluffs for voting and being non-citizens. There were two individuals who have warrants out for their arrest in Page County. So, I mean, this has occurred. Now, the numbers, we just don't know yet because I have not been given access to that federal database, and I'm not going to move forward with removing people from the list until we have all that information.
So far, the only problems that we have solid evidence against are six people. Is that correct?
Five or six. It's in the single digits right now.
In the single digits. Yep. Okay. Iowa Secretary of State Matt Schultz. Let's go over to Ben Stone, Executive Director of the ACLU in our of Iowa in our Des Moines studio. Ben Stone, does this sound reasonable to you to check the voter rolls there?
Well, I think that it would be a good idea for everyone listening to kind of place all of these issues we're going to talk about today in the context of American history. You know, the founding fathers, as brilliant as they were, you know, they set up a system where only white men with property could vote. It took until right before the Civil War before white men without property could vote. After the Civil War, at least on paper, black men and other races could vote. It took till 1920 before women could get the right to vote, won the right to vote, secured it. And then we had the Civil Rights Movement in the 1950s and 60s that dealt with the Jim Crow practices, you know, the literacy tests and the poll taxes that were used by people in power to thwart the ability of people who, on paper, had the right to vote but were being thwarted from exercising that right. And what we're looking at here all across America, you know, 35 different states have had bills introduced on, you know, voter ID and voter purging type of activities. And this is simply the continuing story of people in power in government using government apparatuses to thwart the ability of people that are different than them from getting involved in voting and involved in their government. Mm-hmm. And what is happening here in Iowa, really unfortunately, is that this system has been brought forward by Secretary Schultz. And we know from the evidence that has come out of Florida and Colorado, two states did use driver's license records to try and find non-citizens in the voter rolls. And in both Florida and Colorado, less than 1/1,000th of 1% of the people that they looked at were non-citizens. We know with as much confidence as we can that that's going to be the case in Iowa. These three people that have been charged, they've not been convicted. It's an infinitesimal amount of people that
Is there any harm done in the Secretary of State pursuing a process that ensures that we maintain accurate voter rolls?
Well, there's tremendous harm, and we demonstrated that to the court, and that's why he was stopped by a district court judge from sending out letters. The SAVE system that he references, it's a conglomeration of 14 federal agencies. It's not designed to create the kind of data you need to be confident. It's not real time. It costs money. It takes time. It's a very flawed system. It is tremendously harmful because it basically tells people who have every right to vote in this country, in Iowa, they are citizens. They have the right to vote, and they're being told, you know what, because you're a new citizen, we're going to ask you to prove all these things. You got to get the paperwork. You got to prove your citizenship status. And the SAVE system is extremely improper for that. And the effect of this whole system that's being attempted is that it really does deter people who are new citizens, who have every right to vote, and who are entitled to be treated equally they're being treated differently, and it affects their freedom to vote.
Ben Stone, Executive Director of the ACLU of Iowa. Secretary of State Matt Schultz, I'll have you respond before we get to our other listeners. What do you make of those charges? This places an unfair burden on these voters. Perhaps intimidation might be a word that would be used here. Why do it?
It's just not true. Just not true. I mean, at the end of the day, what we're doing is we put these measures in place to actually protect these individuals Ben is talking about. You know, otherwise, under law, we would just forward this information to the county auditors. We're trying to give individuals an opportunity to make sure that our records are accurate. My discussions with SAVE and the Attorney General's discussions with the federal government with SAVE is that it is a real time, that it does have accurate information as to individuals' citizenship status, as to when they became citizens. And the whole idea for using that information is to make sure that people who are citizens don't get this letter. And even if they are and they do, we give them actually two notices with 30 days to respond. And if they need more time to get us the information, we give them as much time as they want.
Okay. Let me go to Myrna Loerlein here, where the past president of the League of Women Voters of Iowa. We had this put in a historical context by Ben Stone of the suffragettes from about 100 years ago. Myrna Loerlein, how do you see this?
Well, the basic principle of the League of Women Voters is that a person's right to vote is the most basic right in a democracy. And we need to be very, very careful if we're going to erect any barriers between a citizen and any citizen and their right to vote. So we always look at things like this very, very carefully. And one of the problems we have with the current proposal is that the information that we have found shows that there are timeliness issues with using the driver's license list and with using the SAVE list. There are also some accuracy issues and so on. We really appreciate all the effort that's being given to keep the election process in Iowa a top-notch process.
What would you suggest, aside from this system, to keep those voter rolls intact, accurate? Do you have an alternative?
You know, I don't. The only thing I have is some information, mostly actually what came from the process that the ACLU and the League and some others followed. So it's not something that in my life I investigate the how-to, but we are just very much concerned about the process that's being used. So that's one thing. We don't want to erect any barriers between any eligible voter and their right to vote. And we really are, if we're going to be purging, yes, we want to keep our voting records accurate, but we want to be really, really careful about how that happens. The other thing that the League has a question about, is pretty concerned about, is whether this process should be originating in the office of the Secretary of State. And so we are hoping that this process will really take a legislative approach, and we look forward to that happening in this session.
Okay. Make the argument that this is not the Secretary of State's terrain.
There's some real question, and I'm sure Mr. Schultz has heard this before, too, as people read the law, about whether he is charged with the responsibility for promulgating these administrative rules or whether that responsibility lies with the legislature.
Okay. I want to get State Representative Renee Schulte in this conversation because you have, while in the legislature, you're trying to pass a law requiring Iowans to show a state-issued ID when they register to vote. Now, how does that fit into this overall push to keep our rolls accurate and prevent voter fraud?
That's a really good question. There was a couple of years ago, the Des Moines Register had a large article that was out that at the time we had multiple counties in the state of Iowa who had more people registered to vote than we had people living in those counties. That's a problem. And having been elected in a very tight election where we had a recount of that election and I won by a whopping 13 votes, every vote counts. And whatever the issue is, if you're talking integrity, one of my favorite quotes is by Peter Scorsese that says, integrity is not a 90% thing or a 95% thing. Either you have it or you don't. And so if one person isn't voting legally, that's a problem for me. And so this isn't just about my work in the legislature with voter ID. I mean, this is personal, and it matters. And I have friends who have gone through the citizens process to go back to the situation we're talking about now with legal citizenship, and they've done everything they need to do to be legal citizens and to vote, which is one of the prizes and the jewels of becoming a citizen in America. And they're not happy and are very unhappy about people who are not legal who are voting in our state. And mm-hmm. and so for me to look – yes, we want to be cautious, and yes, you want to make sure you use the right tools. But anybody who's doing that in some way to harm the process, that leaves us without integrity. And so this is a bigger issue than that. And the voter ID bill specifically, we can talk about more as we go forward into this conversation. But that is another way, just to verify who you are. And you have to do that for all other walks of life. And so this is one other area where you do it everywhere else. It makes sense for people to know who you are.
Ben Stone, respond to that, because I know you don't agree with a voter ID.
Well, yes, I think that it's really interesting that before 2006, not a single state had a mandatory photo ID issued by the government requirement. And then all of a sudden, you know, Indiana brought it forth. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court. The Supreme Court found that they didn't feel like you needed to have any evidence of fraud that would be addressed by voter ID, and they said, go ahead. And since the 2010 election, you know, dozens of states have all of a sudden decided that you need to have a photo ID, or at least the proposal's been out there. They haven't all implemented it, of course. But there has been no evidence. There is no evidence in any state in this country that people are impersonating other people to vote.
Okay, Ben Stone, Myrna wants to get in here, but so what do you attribute it to? What is the move? Why is this happening? If there's what you're essentially saying, it's a solution in search of a problem.
Yeah, that's one of the cliches, but it's really just the continuation of the story of America, which is a power struggle between those who want to use the government to constrain people and their ability to impact policy through their government through voting, and the people that want to stop that.
Representative Schulte said, you know, if one person votes fraudulently, that concerns me. That shouldn't happen. Do you agree with that, or is your hurdle a little bit higher? Does it take 50 or 100 people to vote fraudulently? Ben Stone.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I thought you were referring to someone else.
No, where do you place that, Mark? Are you concerned about that?
Well, there's ways to make sure that there's integrity in the system. And the system largely does have integrity. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, invented things here. There was a study of voter fraud cases in the United States since the year 2000. There are about 2,068 cases that were documented. Of those 2,000 cases, 10 involved voter impersonation. That is 0.5% of the fraud cases involved voter impersonation, which is what voter ID is designed to address. Voter ID does not need to be done, and here's why. If you walk into a voting place and you impersonate someone else, you say, you know, I'm Ben Kiefer, let me vote, and you vote, you are subjecting yourself to 5 years in a federal prison or $10,000 fine, or 5 years in an Iowa prison.
Right, right. So I'm trying to...
And the benefit and then once you vote, you've given your favorite politician one extra vote, and you walk out vulnerable to 5 years in prison, plus you've gained nothing else. There's nothing you can do.
What about that mindset? Who would take that risk for one vote?
How many times do you cross a street not when there's an intersection? I mean, it's jaywalking. You cannot prove this. Just because you say there's no case does not mean it doesn't exist. The point is, we know there's a loophole that exists. But all I need to know is your name and your birthday, and I can walk in and ask for your ballot. And if a poll worker does not know who you are, then they'll give it to you.
But isn't the point being made that you haven't proved that there are a bunch of jaywalkers out there?
And you haven't proved that there isn't. Just because there isn't a case. I mean, think about voter impersonation for a second. You have to – a poll worker has to know that you're not the person. How are they supposed to know?
Okay. Myrna Horvath.
Can I jump in just real quick?
Myrna hasn't spoken. She wanted to get in.
Well, here's the situation. When you have a fundamental right – the government cannot place barriers and impediments to that without justification. So the fact that the burden is on the government and on these politicians to justify making it harder for people to vote.
Okay. Myrna Lorline.
Yes. A couple of things just to sort of agree with what Ben is saying. The Department of Justice did a study from 2002 to 2005, and out of almost 200 million votes cast. 26 people were convicted of voter fraud, and we don't even know if those 26 were voter impersonation. So the scope of the problem is less than infinitesimal. It's just not there. But the thing I would talk about is, how do we know this has happened? I was in a group recently on Election Day, and there was a gal in that group whose daughter was voting for the first time, and she was really excited. And her mom was really excited about this, and they started talking about the process. And the girl said to her mother, "How would people know that it's me? Maybe somebody else could come and vote in my name." And I started thinking about that, and it occurs to me that there are dozens of states in this country who have voter ID laws, and we've had millions of votes when this has been a controversy. And I don't recall ever hearing any voter, any report of any voter saying, "Wait a minute, I went to vote and somebody had already voted in my name." There may be some, but surely if this were a problem, we would hear far more about that than we do.
Representative Schulte, you wanted to jump in?
I had a representative colleague in Western Iowa that happened to them, and they were voting absentee, and this was just in the last year's election. And so it is more common than people know. The key word every time you have this conversation is about convicted. The level of threshold for a conviction is very high, and it's a very low priority in people that are in the police realm and the folks that have to prosecute. So it's not about people not getting accused of or the fact that it's not an issue. It's just that the fact that the conviction rate is a lot lower because of the threshold.
River to River listeners, are you worried about the integrity of our election system, or do you think there's something else going on here? 1-866-780-9100. And we do want to get to that. We're coming up on a break. Time enough to take one call. A number of people want to join our conversation. Mitch is with us from Des Moines. Please be brief. Mitch, we have a break we're coming up to.
Okay. Well, I'll try to be quick as possible. I have a real concern. Secretary Schulte has talked about the SAVE program. And I've looked into this. You know, the SAVE program is not a database of citizenship records, nor can it provide real-time information, as Mr. Stone indicated. And you know, again, the SAVE does not contain information on U.S. citizens born in the U.S., nor does it contain information on undocumented workers. And there is no national database of all citizens that states can check to prove U.S. citizenship or voter eligibility. And the U.S. United States Citizenship and Immigration Services has advised against using SAVE to maintain voter registration lists.
Okay, we haven't mentioned SAVE. We'll get the secretary to respond. We're going to go to a break. Mitch, thank you for your call. SAVE, the Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements is what that acronym stands for, I believe.
And let me be clear. We're not using this system to vet your voter registration. We're not trying to require everyone to go through SAVE to become registered to vote. This is a case where we actually already have a record, an immigration record of you, either by a student visa or work permit that the DOT has on file. And those individuals, the SAVE database does have real-time information on.
Okay. Secretary of State Matt Schulte in our Iowa City studio. Ben Stone, the executive director of the ACLU in Des Moines. State Representative Renee Schulte with us as well. And Myrna Lorlein, past president of the League of Women Voters. We hope you'll join our conversation as well. Do you think Iowa needs to instate a voter ID? Backers say it's needed to ensure the integrity of our elections. Opponents claim it could prevent thousands of people from voting. What's your opinion? What's your view on this conversation? What do you agree with? What do you disagree with? 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Our email, tweet us at IPR Talk, or find us on Facebook. Back with more as we talk about ballot access. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So glad you're with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Vice President Joe Biden's Gun Safety Task Force has been meeting in Washington to discuss a set of proposals meant to reduce gun violence. It's been happening this week, this very day, as a matter of fact. As the Iowa legislative session approaches, there are efforts in the state to alter Iowa's gun laws, either by tightening or loosening restrictions on buying and carrying firearms. Tomorrow on this program, we'll discuss the plans proposed at the state and national levels. We'll also compare the nation's gun laws to those of countries abroad, and we hope you'll join that discussion as well. Today, we're talking about the integrity of our election system. Do you think Iowa needs to instate a voter ID? Well, the law's backers say it needed to ensure the integrity of our elections. Opponents claim it could prevent thousands of people, poor and minorities, from voting. What's your opinion? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Joining us in our studios, Secretary of State Matt Schultz is with us. Ben Stone, Executive Director of the ACLU of Iowa. State Representative Renee Schulte and Myrna Lorlein, past president of the League of Women Voters of Iowa. And we do so appreciate all of you making the time, the full hour, to discuss this very important issue. Before we get back to voter ID, a related issue that I wanted to make sure we pulled in under our tent to talk about, and I'd like you to respond to this, Secretary of State Schultz. During Governor Tom Vilsack's administration, he issued an executive order which restored voting rights for all felons who have completed their sentences. Then when Governor Terry Branstad took office the second time, he reversed Governor Vilsack's executive order. And now, as it stands, if a felon wants to regain the right to vote in Iowa, they have to send in an application to the State Division of Criminal Investigation, which in turn sends it to the parole board for a recommendation. You supported the governor in this decision. Why?
I did.
Why did we need to go from automatic back to jumping several hoops?
Well, it's state law doesn't allow felons to vote, but it gives the governor the ability to restore those rights. So Governor Vilsack did that for everybody with an executive order. I personally think there are just some crimes that are so heinous that a person doesn't deserve to have that restored. If somebody rapes a woman or commits murder, a heinous crime, if I were governor, I would not restore their rights. But for most others who go through the process, other than a heinous crime, I do believe they should have their rights restored. And my understanding is that Governor Branstad has relaxed that application process, or has been working with groups who have come to talk to him about relaxing his application process for restoring rights. But that really is under his purview. But I did support the change to go back the way the law was intended, because I do believe there are certain crimes that should not have those rights restored.
Ben Stone, can you respond to that? Restoring these voting rights to felons, if that makes a difference, if it's done automatically, or the way the Secretary of State describes?
Well, it's really unfortunate that Iowa reverted back to its previous status before Governor Vilsack's order in 2005. There are only four states in the country that automatically deny voting rights to people coming out of prison on felonies for life. And Iowa is the only state among those four that is not a former slave state. You know, when you get out of prison and you get out in the workforce and you start paying taxes, you should be able to vote. And that was reflected in the previous administration's approach.
You've served your time. You've paid your restitution. Let's put you back to your regular status.
Well, let me add that, you know, it is really laudable that the governor has responded to the efforts of many groups, including us and particularly the NAACP, to encourage him to get rid of the credit report, which was we were the only state in the country that did that. Very much a deterrent.
Credit report to see if they had any dues to pay, any restitution to pay?
Yeah, it required people to submit their credit report. And while they didn't require you to have a certain credit score to get your voting restored, it created this turmoil because most people coming out of prison don't have good credit, and so they're not going to, well, gosh, I got bad credit, I'm not even going to apply. So getting rid of that is good, and also making it so if you've got a good faith effort to pay your restitution and you're current, that they're going to make a process where that isn't not going to be a bar to your getting voting rights restored. So that's really, really encouraging, and we're hoping that eventually the state of Iowa can go to where most states are, which is where that there is a virtually automatic process where when people get out of prison and they've paid their sentence, that they get the right to vote back.
Ben Stone of the ACLU on our program today. Jim is dialing in from Spencer to this very point about felons who've served their time having their voting rights restored. Jim, what's your opinion here?
Well, I think it's a real sticky issue with some states now, because the very fact that somebody with the same name and probably the same, you know, basic nationality is a felon, and now all these people are being rejected they're having their voter rights removed. And I think that the idea that felons have lost their right to vote is something that is a completely separate issue from criminality. The right to vote is not something that you should necessarily lose just because you're convicted of a felony.
No matter how heinous the crime.
Well, these people are probably going to stay in prison the rest of their lives anyway, so I think that's a non-starter.
Okay, thank you, Jim and Spencer. Let's move to Mary in Iowa City. Mary, did you have something on this point or something else?
Well, I have every time the conversation changes, I have a point. But my point
all right,
is
very good.
That the Republicans have lost their minds. They just saw all those minorities out there voting, and all of a sudden now they want to change the rules. Now, Bobby Gentle, I guess that's how you pronounce his name, he's trying to tell them, no, don't do this, because you're driving people out to vote and you're driving people out of the Republican Party. And all that things attached to the ID, that's just another form of the poll tax. Now, we got to get serious. Do we want people to vote? If you don't want people to vote, say nobody can vote. And that'll settle the whole thing.
Mary in Iowa City, thank you for listening and for contributing to this program of response. Before we move on, perhaps we can talk a little bit more about this aspect, because we've touched on it very briefly, but is it not the elephant in the room that perhaps due to being polite or not straight shooters enough that we're not talking about it? In recent years, voter ID laws have become an issue in many states, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, a couple of them. In every instance, Republicans campaign to have voter ID instated, and Democrats balk at this option. Why, Secretary Schultz, is voter ID such a big issue for Republicans nationally?
I don't know. It's something I ran on. Somebody didn't tell me to run on it. I mean, it's something I thought was important.
You have not consulted with Republicans nationally in other states about voter ID and what actions you're taking here in Iowa.
When I've gone to my NAS conference after being elected, I told them what I wanted to do and the way I thought it was important to do it. But there was no coordination of any kind. It was something I ran on. It was something that I thought was important.
Well, what makes people sort of suspect this, and listen to this, and I'm sure you've heard this cut from, I think you say his name, Mike Terzai. He's a Pennsylvania GOP House Majority Leader. He was caught on tape. He knew he was on tape, talking about a new stricter voter ID in Pennsylvania and how it will help Republicans win the state for the first time since 1988. I believe this is from August of last year. Let's listen. Very short.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Secretary Schultz, what are we to infer from that?
that he doesn't know what he's talking about? I mean, honestly, I don't know why anybody would think that this would give anyone an advantage unless somebody thinks one side or the other is cheating with in-person voting. To me, this is an issue that 76% at least Iowans support, and this is about bringing confidence to a system and making sure people aren't cheating. I don't know how it would give someone an advantage unless somebody is cheating.
Is there a policy agenda here at stake, Myrna Loerlein?
Well, first of all, I'm here for the League of Women Voters, and we are entirely nonpartisan. So for us, we don't want to look at this issue from a partisan point of view. We want to look at this issue, our voters being given accurate access to the polls. And so our issue is that that voter ID eliminates or makes a barrier between certain sets of people. And those people include the elderly, disabled, African Americans, and others. And so that's the thing that we are concerned about. Whichever party would be favoring voter ID, the League of Women Voters would be opposed to it.
We've been talking about voter IDs as if it's one thing, whether it's in Pennsylvania, Minnesota, or Iowa. And I know that in Iowa, the ID voter ID proposed here, does it have characteristics that's different than the ones that have been proposed in other states, Renee or Secretary Schultz?
If I may, I think the one I proposed is very different. And let me back up for a second. Before I proposed it, I created an election advisory board made up of 5 Democrat and 5 Republican county auditors. And I brought it forward to them and saying, hey, what are your concerns? And they voiced a lot of the concerns of the League of Women as well. And I would have those concerns too. So we crafted the bill to be a little different. And I'll just run through the points real quickly. Number one, we allow any federal or state issued ID as well as any local government issued ID under my bill. I even changed it this year to allow any of those IDs, even if they have a expiration date or not. And that came from a conversation I had with Mike Gronstahl. We were kind of kidding each other, waiting in line to meet the vice president of China. And he made the point that he could use a state issued ID to get into the Capitol, but not to vote. That was a valid point. So I changed that. We for elderly, for people who are confined to healthcare facilities, we just require them to sign an affidavit that says they are who they say they are. Mm-hmm. We allow somebody to attest for another person as long as the attester has a valid ID. So it's kind of with the spirit of the law. We also provide a free ID, and I think the most important point, it's implemented over a 2-year period of time. So people will be asked to show their ID when they go to the polls, but they won't. They'll be treated the same as they are now for 2 years, giving them an opportunity to get used to and educated on bringing an ID.
Ben Stone, Secretary, seems to be seeking common ground, listening to those who are opponents of this voter ID, incorporating some of their IDs. Ideas? Are you satisfied?
Well, I think if you would pardon me to be a little more cynical, I think that that's the bill is written basically to make it more likely it's going to pass. Aside from
well, you write all bills.
Are,
we write all bills but, that way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the voters are yearning to have compromises made. People reach conclusions together. I mean, saying a bill is written to pass. Of course, right?
Well, but I think what I'm saying is that there is no groundswell for this legislation. In fact, the groundswell is opposed to it. And let's not forget that whatever tweaking has been done to his proposal, the bottom basic premise that there's a problem that needs to be addressed is demonstrably not true. And so what we have going on here is an attempt to create a mechanism. And we know from how this has happened in other states that you know, there are certain groups, as Myrna has said, that do not have access. It's not just getting the ID, but you need to have the underlying documents in order to get the ID. And so there are situations where, you know, for instance, women in this country, you know, when they get married, they don't necessarily go back and get their Social Security card changed to have their new name. And so there's all kinds of hassles and expense and time that this kind of thing can happen. But let's not forget, none of this is really necessary because there's no demonstrated problem of in-person voter fraud.
Okay. By our research, 6 people charged for non-citizen voting in Iowa, 2 for felon voting. We agreed in the single digits here, too. I wonder if we know those people that we have to admit with over 1.5 million voters in Iowa, a minuscule percentage of the voting population— why they voted illegally, because perhaps, Secretary, is education raising awareness? Do people do this? Do we know if these people just did it out of ignorance? They didn't know the law and proceeded to vote that on that basis.
I'm sure that happens, and I'm not going to speculate on
these
individuals.
Do we know about these 8 people?
I don't know. I didn't personally interview them. I mean,
that would
that's
be good information
over,
to have, wouldn't it?
That's turned – well, when people are being prosecuted, those things are being taken into consideration by prosecutors.
Right.
And so I'm not going to speculate as to those specific cases. I can tell you, though, I really think that it's important. I understand what Ben's saying. But at the same time, it was actually on this program almost a year ago that you introduced me to Heather Smith at Rock the Vote. And Heather and I created a program called Rock Iowa. And it's a one of a kind in the country. And I go to high schools and I encourage young people to vote using this program. And I tell them every time that their vote counts. Every vote counts. And that's what we tell all these kids. Your vote counts. It makes a difference. If it's true, then on the flip side, every time somebody does something wrong, it cancels out their vote. So the minuscule numbers, we have elections being decided that are closer and closer. Renee's is a good example. And just a few number of votes can make a huge difference. So to try and say just because it's a small number, I think minimizes the true problem is, does every vote count or not? And I believe it does.
Renee, quickly, we want to get back to the phones before our hour ends.
I believe that people need to understand, too, that the current law says that if somebody doesn't recognize you at the polls, that they can ask you to show a current ID. And so right now what you have is potentially what people might consider profiling, where in certain communities they ask for IDs, in certain communities they don't. And the law currently says that you can. So one thing about IDs is actually making it equitable for every Iowan to show an ID equitably, not just if somebody doesn't recognize you at the polls. And I don't think Iowans understand that, mm-hmm. because right now it's within their legal right to ask you for an ID, and they may pick you and not your friend. And somehow that the people think that now that's okay in Iowa. But what we're trying to do is make it equitable so everybody shows the ID and it makes it fair.
Myrna Lorlein.
I would like to change the focus of this conversation just a little bit. We've already established that the incidence of voting questionability is very, very tiny in this state. So as citizens are deciding whether voter ID is a good idea or not, I think a piece of information that they need is how much it's going to cost. We have figures for Missouri. I have some numbers for Missouri. It costs Missouri $6 million in their first year to institute voter ID, and it costs them $4 million every year after that. They may have more voters, but it helps us understand some of the financial framework. It cost Indiana almost $2.5 million to get it going, and they spent $10 million from the time their law was instituted through 2010 just for birth certificates and IDs.
So we have – is it worth it? This costs millions of dollars. All we have right now, the evidence shows, all we have right now in the single digits.
That was one of the things that was brought up to the Election Advisory Board. That's why my bill is different from Missouri and Indiana. It's implemented over a two-year period of time. They implemented theirs immediately, and they spent all their money on education.
Does that make the bill cost less?
Because they spent all their money on education to get people educated right away. That's where the money is going to, and those millions of dollars is all for an education campaign. And you give a statewide elected official a check for $1 million, what are they going to do? They're going to spend it. I'm not asking for that.
Mm-hmm. Myrna, your agreement there?
Well, one of the figures from Missouri is that it costs them $4 million every year, not the first year, not for implementation, every year. Let's talk for a minute, too, about the cost to the voter, if we might. The Supreme Court has said that the state instituting voter ID has to provide free birth certificates and free IDs, and that's true. If Iowa did that, and these numbers come from, I think, estimates from a county auditor's report, it would cost Iowa about a little over $1.5 million a year just for that. So I think we need to decide, how do we want to spend our $1.5 million a year?
Okay. We have just a couple minutes, and I want to provide some sense of closure here. Perhaps as we look toward the future, there is that. And let me start with Ben Stone. How you see this issue developing in the future, what are your hopes? Do you see some common ground there?
Well, I guess I'm hopeful that the people of Iowa are really coming to understand what is going on. And they're not pleased. They're fighting back. The Latino community has been really amazing in their advocacy. The African-American community, the NAACP. People are understanding that this is part of an ongoing struggle that we've had in this country for over 200 years. And that struggle is going to continue. The people that you know, this is not a moral equivalency. I mean, it is profoundly moral to establish that people have the right to exercise their freedom to vote. And the side that wants to push back against that and take that away is profoundly immoral.
Secretary Schultz, what do you see when you look in the future? What are your hopes?
Well, number one, I totally disagree with Ben. I think Iowans do see what's really going on here. It's not what he's saying. I mean, he's practically calling me a racist without using the word. It's just not true. I mean, this isn't about keeping people from voting. It's making sure that eligible people are casting a vote, and we're protecting that vote. And I believe that's why the Attorney General is defending me. And I think the people of Iowa, I think, you know, common sense reforms like my voter ID bill will eventually pass the legislature.
Myrna Loerlein, can I turn to you as the past president of the League of Women Voters of Iowa to see if you see any common ground here? Where do you see this moving in the future?
Well, the League of Women Voters is always going to be opposed to voter ID. So I'm hoping for the future we will celebrate the integrity our electoral system in Iowa already has, and that we'll move our efforts to enabling more people to vote.
Renee Schulte, perhaps you have the last word. Any thoughts left unsaid from your side?
Well, I think it's important to realize, one, I am a League of Women Voter member, and I do support voter ID, so we don't all agree on that issue. And I also think it's important to understand that in the states where voter ID has passed, the number of people voting has actually increased, because it does increase the integrity of our voting. And in such tight elections in the state of Iowa, I think every vote counts, every vote matters, and I think anything that we can do to increase the integrity in the process should be done.
State Representative Renee Schulte, Ben Stone of the ACLU, Secretary of State Matt Schultz, and Myrna Loerlein, past president of the League of Women Voters of Iowa. We thank you for making the time for us. We really appreciate this honest exchange of ideas. Thank you.
Thanks,
all.
Ben.
Thank you.
River
to
River is produced by Sarah Bowden and Emily Woodbury. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. In Des Moines, help from John Pemble. Podcasting and on-demand audio. If you've missed part of this, go to iowapublicradio.org and you'll see it posted. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.